All right, we're going to try and make this quick for you, but not so quick you don't get it. So I'm going to basically just do a little introduction about why we're doing what we're doing, and then we'll move into everything else. Yeah, you guys are like, so like you're in church service. We're having gospel community. Stop talking to me. Essentially, when we had our staff retreat earlier this year, we came back with a bunch of things about Element and our vision and how we believe that gospel communities are central to the vision of who we are. Because as we tend to grow, and this year we have grown as well, and we continue to push farther and farther, the only way that everybody's going to get connected and have meaningful relationships is if we concentrate and put our full force and focus behind gospel communities. Because Sunday morning should be the time that gospel communities gather together for corporate worship together. That's what it should be. You know, it's all these little individualized churches coming together to worship God together as a corporate body. And when we start doing that, people actually start understanding that. They'll know that, oh, this is my church and I'm part of this church. And so we started talking about, you know, what do we want to see in these things? So we talked about how do we turn boys into men and girls into women, and what's biblical parenting and equipping for ministry and discipleship and establishing community and mission and member care and service, being rooted in scripture. You know, how do all these things work? All these things work in gospel community. That is the place where they're going to make the most sense to people as we put boots on the ground to do these things. And so in that, we wanted to start getting you guys together as GC leaders and coaches and all that, so that you can start going forward with the vision that we have, so that you understand it better and better and better. And that's why we're doing this today. We gave you this, I think, Element's Vision 2011 on there. Eventually, we'd like to get that into everybody's hands. Hopefully, we'll do another all-church meeting at some point, and then we'll get that into people's hands for that. But we believe that in gospel community, that's how we're going to bless everybody in our valley and essentially everybody in the world one day is through these communities that God has set us up to live in as his people. And so we would like to have, within the next 7 years, if Element continues to grow the way that it has, we'd like to see over 100 new gospel communities in the next 7 years. Wouldn't that just be awesome? Yes, it would be awesome, because in that means people are being reached with the gospel of Jesus Christ, that more and more people are being saved and more and more people living on the mission that God calls us to be on. And so we want every single one of our GCs to have a missional focus, to understand that they are missionaries in the culture in which they live and that God has called them to be the light of Christ where they are. What we think is a good goal for this. We don't want anybody to ever think that they can't come to Element if they're not in a GC, but we have a goal set that we would like to see 80% of people who attend Element in GCs. Right now, after staff retreat, we have looked, and it ends up we're right now about 52%, which was astounding to me. If we based our number on 300, right now we're probably keep averaging, bumping up about 320. But if we average a number about 300, we have about 156 people in GCs right now, which is astounding to me. I was like, really? As we added it up, I was thinking, you know, like 20% maybe if we're lucky. And it was like, I'm just like, wow, that's awesome. Way to go. You just keep doing what you're doing because it's awesome. We'd also, in this, we want to see more churches planted with this focus because, again, that's how we believe people will be reached. So in the next 7 years, we'd like to plant 3 churches. We'd like to see a church in northern Santa Maria, where a lot of churches have pulled out of. We'd like to see a church in Napomo and then one Lompoc by the base. And we don't know how all those are going to work out logistically, but that's kind of our goal. Because if we can get to North Santa Maria, we could probably very easily move into another Hispanic plant from that, and then maybe into a Guadalupe plant. And then Napomo, we could go to AG, 5 cities, you know, in there, Grover, maybe somewhere in there. And Lompoc, we can get in the base, then maybe we could get another plant downtown, all with the same focus. Move in the same direction, hopefully with the same eldership structure over everything, so we have this one vision and massively moving forward and trying to reach our entire Central Coast area with the gospel of Jesus Christ, because once again, that's the most important thing. I mean, we are nothing. Jesus is everything. It's all about Jesus. If we ever have any question about who the church is about and the answer is not Jesus, we've just gone off the rails. So we always want to be about Jesus, and it's really exciting. So who's up? Is it Will? Or are you going to say something? Oh, I need to tell you something. Sorry, I forgot. Mike Easel, tell people this. I was talking to Kathy San Jose a couple of weeks ago about this. I've asked the board to let me hire Mikey a couple extra days a week. Because of we're going to need more time to see this start to happen. And so one of Mikey's main jobs with the couple extra days a week he's working for Element is to get behind and to make sure GCs are happening. He's meeting with the coaches. He's working alongside Eric Giaffrutti to make sure that we can get this vision to be what it's supposed to be. And so when there's ministry events or things like that, a lot of those things, if you ask me, I'm going to, like you this week, I point them back to Mikey now. Because, right, that takes a lot of pressure off of me for all the things that I'm doing. Because sometimes I get really overwhelmed, and that's one of the reasons why I asked the board to let me hire him a couple days a week. So they said yes. And so if you are doing, like, some ministry things, they'll probably go back and go through Mikey. It's not to mean that he's always going to tell you what to do. It's meaning a lot of his job is to help you to make sure it becomes a success and that it falls in line with Element's vision and works the way we want it to go. And I'm looking. Okay, good. Sean Jones and Kara left. We're looking, just to let you know, in a couple weeks, like on the 14th, I think is his last Sunday, we want to do a big get-together, which is like a potluck or something on that Sunday afternoon. And I want to throw it out there. I've been talking to Kathy about doing it and just want all of you guys to be aware of it so you can maybe put on your calendar and make sure you're there as well, letting your GCs know about it. It can't really be a surprise if we want him to come, so I'll probably start talking about it next week a little bit, but I just wanted you guys to be aware of that. So if you have something, someone asks you today, hey, on the 14th, no, Sean Jones, we got it, because we want to really bless him before he goes too. All right.
We are extremely excited about gospel communities where we feel God is calling us to, the conviction that we have in our hearts for them, and what we believe God is doing. Will is my co-GC leader, and he's been here almost a year now. And when he first got here, I told him, I feel like we're on this edge of this cliff. And he looks at me a couple weeks ago, and he goes, you remember this cliff you're telling me? And I go, yeah. He goes, we're free-falling now. So I feel like we're over it, which is exciting to me. I believe God is blessing us even more. And so I'm genuinely very excited. So I wanted to say hi again, and wanted you guys, we're going to try a lot of different things than what we've been doing before. If you guys can't tell, announcements within gospel communities, as you've hopefully been bombarded with my emails, and been thinking about switching different things, even more than that. So, and all of it is to just try to, as we grow, to multiply and be redundant in our communication so everybody knows what's happening and everybody's on the same page, and as well as to really put our money where our mouth is in terms of if we say gospel communities are this important, we are actually doing everything we can to live that out and push gospel communities and put our efforts and energies in them. So if you ever have any problems, questions, or anything like that, come see me. And, of course, your GC coach as well. And we will – I forgot where I was going to go. But so your GC coach and – yeah, so I want to introduce Will. If you do not know Will, this is kind of why we're doing today. He came up to staff retreat, and he shared his story. He was in England for 2 years and was part of the Crowded House for 2 years. And I believe he has been the biggest blessing God has given me and Element in the past 2 years. He's brought a lot of wisdom and guidance in gospel communities in my life, and has shaped a lot of what this GCs mean and helped me to find it. And so we've asked him to come and share some of that and his stories. That's where I was going to go. We want to hear your guys' stories. We want to hear, as things happen, we want to hear about it. We want to communicate that. So in the next coming months, especially as Song of Solomon ends, we have some plans to start sharing some stories physically here in the building, and then and so we want to hear any kind of stories that might be happening within your GC. So please pass that up to your coach or anything like that. Anyways, back to Will. So he's going to share his stories with his time over in England. And so that's why we really wanted you guys to listen to Steve Timmis in the audio files, because he worked with Steve. So this is Will Flathers. He's from Virginia originally, so his accent's a little mixed between Virginia and England.
He's going to turn me on. Ooh, wow, I can hear myself. Excellent. All right, so, the purpose, I just wanted to share some stories from England, from my experiences there. Mikey, I mean, that was a very gracious introduction, but it really felt my entire time like, not like, God was the one who was doing it, so I was an observer, and I was soaking it in, so I can't take any credit for it. Why I was over there, so originally from East Coast, from Virginia, born and raised, went to school there. Graduated and got into a grad program in England at the University of Sheffield. It was a 2-year master's degree, so that's what brought me over there. Didn't know a soul in the city when I first showed up, had no idea what it was about. Sheffield, the city I was in, is a city in the north of England. It's about 2.5 to 3 hours north of London, which is the industrial heartland of England, right? It's northern, it's cold, the city has a lot of heavy industry, heavy metalwork. It has, throughout history, like even Canterbury Tales, right, with Chaucer, he writes about the cutlers of Sheffield. But it's set in, it's this city, about 500,000, that's roughly how big it is, and set in just a really beautiful countryside. So it's kind of, if you imagine Pittsburgh set in a national park, that's Sheffield. It's a great place. People there, very hardy, very, like, hardworking, kind of rough around the edges, thick Yorkshire accents, really hard to understand. They like their beer and their pies, they're awesome. Really like them. If you've seen the movie The Full Monty, that is Sheffield. That is entirely Sheffield. Slightly more family-friendly references. If it's like the city of Wallace and Gromit is Sheffield. If you've seen History Boys, that's Sheffield. Or in Top Gear, the episode where they have the three-wheeled cars, the Robin Reliant that tips over on all the roundabouts, that is Sheffield. So in the 80s, the steel industry collapsed. A lot of the industry moved elsewhere, and the city has since then kind of been trying to reinvent itself, to rediscover itself. A lot of joblessness, a lot of kind of people without a lot of future, trying to reorganize things. But at the same time, so despite that kind of grasping for a new identity, there are two very large universities there. I was part of one of them. So between the two schools, there's probably 80,000 students. So that brings a lot of, the arts is back, a lot of youth, a lot of, there's a big nightlife. And as well as there's a very large immigrant community in Sheffield. A lot of folks from all over the world, especially Middle East and North Africa in particular. So that's Sheffield. That was the situation I was going into. I ended up at the church I was at called Crowded House, really entirely by God's providence. Didn't know anything about it beforehand. Stumbled upon it. Someone recommended it to me, so I gave it a try. What I liked about it from the get-go was that it combined three things that God had been kind of teaching me in separate points in my life and brought them together in a way that I thought was unusual. So there was very real Christian fellowship. I could tell that from the beginning. But they also had a very real commitment to God's word. They weren't just doing their own thing. They weren't just making it up as they go. They wanted to live life that was motivated by what they saw in the scriptures. But then they also had this very real sense of being missionary team together. It's one of those things where I had always been thinking long term about being a missionary in the classic sense. I knew I had no purpose being an overseas missionary if I wasn't even being a missionary to my neighbors. But I never really saw I had no idea of what that looked like. I can never kind of get myself to do it, get beyond my fear and all that kind of thing. But here in Sheffield and there at Crowded House, it was just a whole church of people who were doing just that. Just normal people, but living as missionaries, which was exciting. So I was there for 2 years total. The first year, I was part of a gospel community, just Joe Schmo, member, learning what it was all about, kind of constantly having to realize, oh, that's what it's about. Oh, no. Oh, that's what it's about. And then eventually, the second year, I was able to help lead that same GC. So in Crowded House, if you guys heard the sermon audio that we recommended, that was one of the elders, Steve Timmis, and that was what we wanted to do. We wanted to be to live life together as extended family, but purposely, and with the purpose, the specific purpose of mission, the specific purpose of spreading the name and fame of Jesus. So Paul can say to we wanted to share life together, right? So in 1 Thessalonians, Paul says to them, we loved you so much that I shared not only the gospel with you, but our lives as well. We wanted to be able to say that to each other in the sense that we're not here just to, you know, give people a Bible, but to show them the gospel and to share life with them. Because that's where it gets fleshed out, right, in the daily life. And that's where I need it most, is when I do get frustrated and angry and stuff. But we also wanted to be a community where our life pointed people to Christ. We wanted people to see in us that being a Christian, living under Christ's rule, didn't mean life was going to be easy, didn't mean you would never have troubles and stuff, but it did mean that we had real hope, we had real peace, we had real purpose, we had real joy, we had real rest, real fellowship. And it was, we wanted people to see when they looked at our gospel community that life lived under God's rule is good. Taste and see that the Lord is good. That was part of Israel's calling from the beginning. They were meant to be a blessing to the nation, right? They were, and then, you know, in Deuteronomy 4, it was supposed to be so other nations would see this tiny, insignificant nation of Israel and say, what other nation has a God like the God of Israel? Of course, Israel failed miserably. Jesus succeeded wonderfully, and he calls his church to do the same. So that was our hope. That's what motivated us and drove us. What was cool was that from that exact same theology, from that exact same motivation, that exact same foundation, in the exact same city, in some of the same neighborhoods, the expression of gospel community, the expression of who we were, was very unique and very different because of different circumstances, because of different gifts and skills and passions and talents that people brought to the table. It ended up very different. So I wanted to do a rundown of some of the different gospel communities that were there when I was a part of it and some of the ones that are in other parts of the world. So the first one was one called Southview Gospel Community, Southview GC. They had a passion and a heart to reach out to musicians in the city. Sheffield's a very musical city. It's the home of Def Leppard. It's the home of Arctic Monkeys. But they also have a very big folk music scene and a lot of local musicians. So this gospel community, they wanted to reach out to musicians. They wanted to ultimately share the gospel with them. So they hosted a once-a-month music cafe in the church building where they'd get good coffee. They'd have folks in the church bake pies and cakes. They'd invite a local musician or two to play a set. And it was just a fun time of hanging out, of talking, but also of giving some new musicians a venue. The musicians loved it because it wasn't in the back of a dark bar where no one cared. It was people who came to hear the music. Over time, that GC, because they had this kind of consistent contact with those musicians, they were able to get to know them. They were able to befriend them, and ultimately, the musicians began asking, okay, why do you guys do this? Why do you care about our music? Why do you guys care about music in general? And so they were able to say, you know, this is why, because God is this creative God, and we're created in His image, and we want to see music that glorifies Him. And to be a blessing to y'all. So that was a very cool one. I really liked Southview GC. There was one called Broomhall. That gospel community mostly lived in a neighborhood called Broomhall. Really kind of cute old neighborhood, but it had a lot, those couple city blocks that made up Broomhall had a lot of ethnic tension. There was a lot of strife between different ethnic groups there, to the point where there was violence, which is almost unheard of. There was a shooting just down the road from one of my friends in the GC, which is almost unheard of in England, especially in Sheffield. And so that gospel community, they saw that their purpose was to help bring reconciliation to their neighbors. God is a God of reconciliation, so they wanted to be His hands and feet to that community. they began looking for ways that they could bring people together. So they joined the community forum so that they would have a voice in what happened in the community. They would do things like host, international food night at the local community hall, and they'd get people to bake things and bring them. And throughout that, they were able to meet their neighbors. They were able to just show them that there is a better way, that life lived under Christ is good, and hopefully bring some of that healing. Another one was called Sharo Gospel Community, Sharo GC. They mostly lived on a street called Sharo, in a little area called Sharo, which had a bunch of very quaint shops, antique stores, cupcake shops, pubs, that kind of thing. And they decided that as a gospel community, the way they were going to focus their time and effort and energy was to try to reach out to these shopkeepers. And so what they did is they said they'd host a once a quarter, I believe, market in the streets where they'd get vendors, they'd get musicians, they'd get people to come organize it, and just do an open air market. And the shopkeepers loved it, right? Because it brought lots of business in. It was a really fun thing. We've done it, a year and a half now. Been very successful. But because all the times they've spent with the shopkeepers organizing it, all the times they spent with the shopkeepers kind of celebrating its success, they were able to form real relationships with these people who they would probably otherwise never really have a chance to get to know. And because of that, they were able to get involved in their lives in ways that, again, they probably wouldn't. So like this one lady, she owned a pub, and she would not allow any of the other shopkeepers into her pub because at one point someone had offended someone, and her decision was that no other shopkeeper on that street was going to come into her pub. And they would have had no idea about this had they not really been her friend, been around her long term, and then help her work through that. Again, with the mindset of ultimately what these folks need is the gospel. So our hope, right, we had a bunch of different gospel communities. Our hope was to scatter communities of light across the city, whereas, each GC would form and would multiply into new ones, and each one would be reaching different people, and just to have, in every different way, in every different facet, communities that were glorifying Christ all across the city. A really cool one was called Manor Gospel Community. Manor is a welfare estate on the east side of Sheffield. It's one of the biggest in all of England. It's one of the biggest in Europe. And it's, government-assisted housing, several thousand houses. It's huge. And it has a very bad reputation. If you look at kind of the demographics of the city, you'll notice that on the east side, which is the much more industrial side, a lot of the steel mills are formed there. Where Manor is, it has significantly higher crime, significantly higher kind of school dropout rates, significantly higher numbers of broken families. So kind of all the social issues are focused right there. But what we noticed as a church was that also there are very few churches on the east side of Sheffield. You look at the west side, the more affluent side, you could throw a rock and hit a good Bible-believing church. You go towards the east side, not so much. So our desire, our heart, was to see the gospel go out in places where it wasn't yet. For some, that meant the east side. So this group, this gospel community, when it was formed, they got a bunch of people who were willing and committed, and they sold their houses. They moved into houses in Manor. They all lived within a couple blocks of each other so that they would have that kind of community support. For the past 4 or 5 years, they've been just getting to know neighbors, getting comfortable in that surrounding, trying to understand the culture, which is very different than what most of these, because most of the people who started that GC, like they're just normal middle-class English folks. It's like it's an engineer, it's a nurse, it's a couple school teachers, physical therapist, a barber. Just normal people, like not hardcore, seminary trained missionaries, and so they wanted to, in order to reach this community, they realized they have to begin to understand it. One of the things they began doing was holding a pub quiz at the local pub. That way, they could begin meeting the regulars. They could be a blessing to the pub owner, and they could show that they were there to invest in the community. They weren't there just to bide their time. They've realized as a GC that it's long, hard work. They've seen a couple people come to Christ, which is amazing, but they realize they're in it for the long haul. And they told me that realistically, it may be their kids that have the ultimate impact. It may be the next generation. If their kids grow up in that community, they may be the ones who understand it the best and can really specifically share the gospel with those people. But that is the level of you know, commitment that they're thinking in terms of these people need Christ, these people need Jesus, and who else is going to share it with them? I was actually up there up in Visalia, California yesterday, visiting a friend who's in that gospel community. She's an American, married a Brit, and is part of that. And it was really amazing to see her, to catch up with their family. That GC has now grown and split into two. So now there's kind of an upper manor and a lower manor gospel community, so they can reach more and more people. But they're in it for the long haul, and it's awesome to see. We had one called Family GC. Their gospel community had a bunch of, they happened to have a bunch of kids, a bunch of really infants and toddlers. They decided that the way that they could best serve the community and best reach out to people was by hosting a, like a mothers and toddlers group on, I think, like Tuesday mornings at the church building, where, you know, they had playpens and stuff set up. It was a great time because, you know, and they opened it up to the community. These, you know, these moms, kind of especially, they would talk to each other, and they'd talk about how things were going in their life and in their marriage and in their work and with their kids. And and that was a very good time for them just to be open and to share with these other people. That also then gave them an opportunity to befriend these folks and say, hey, you know, my husband and I are going to do a cookout tonight. Do you guys want to come along? We're going to do dinner or take the kids to the park. Do you guys want to bring your kids? So eventually those relationships that began at the mom's group, it overflowed into the rest of the GC, where those became long-term friendships where they could ultimately share the gospel with them and in the specific, you know, in their specific needs. Jesus is good news for your marriage. Jesus is good news for your kids and their kids' future. Jesus is good news for, you know, this crisis. And that's that kind of contextualizing took, though, very familiar relationships with folks. So you'll notice each of the GCs, they had names. And we liked it because it gave them, it gave each GC a sense of identity where, you know, each one kind of, this is who we are. We're distinct, we're separate. Yes, we're part of Cowdered House. Yes, we're part of the same wider church. But we are, you know, we're special. We have a special role to play in this whole grand narrative that God is working out in the world. It also, though, prevented us as leaders from thinking, this is my GC. So it wasn't Will's GC. It wasn't Martin's GC. It wasn't Steve and Janet's GC. It was, you know, Manor GC. It was Cherivelle GC. Because it's not about us as leaders, right? It's about Christ. And the words we say, that's significant. When we say it's my GC and we say it in the sense of ownership, that communicates something about what GCs are. Of course, I will say my GC in the sense of family, just like I'll say my family. I belong to that family. They belong to me. There is that mutual ownership, but it's not one of it's not lording it over them like we were learning today. So another one was called Motley Crue. Very awesome GC. This one had a bunch of, it happened to have a bunch of young people who love football, soccer. So they love soccer, and they decided that what they would do in order to reach out was form a football team where, you know, most of the team was going to be guys from this GC, but they'd invite non-Christians to be a part of the team so that they'd kind of stack their weight in their favor. But over time, you know, over the course of a season or two, they'd be able to befriend these guys, to spend time with these guys, to even just live differently in the way they played football. Not everyone in that GC liked football. Not everyone in that GC played football. So they kind of had to be creative in ways to get everyone involved. A lot of families would have a big, like a big dinner after a football game. And all the guys would come over and, you know, get hosed off, and then they'd come out and they'd eat. And that was a way for people who hated football to serve the GC and to begin to befriend these folks. Other people would come along to the games and just cheer because that's what they could do. That's a way they could be a part and could contribute. So Motley Crue is awesome. They're kind of weird, but in a good way. There's another place in a different city. The city's pronounced Loughborough. It's spelled Lugabaruga. So if you look up on the map for Lugabaruga, you'll see it. That GC, they realized that there's a large Pakistani community in town, and they realized that very few people were kind of purposely reaching out to them. Again, there's very little gospel witness to these folks. Now, Loughborough is also a university town. Most of the people in this GC were from the college. They were either professors or students, or students who stayed on and got jobs in the city. And they had no language background. They had no real familiarization with Pakistani community. So what they decided to do in order to kind of begin getting gaining ground in that area was they went to they found a local Pakistani grocery store which sold kind of ethnic Pakistani food. And as a gospel community, they would go there once a week. They would buy ingredients from that fellow. They'd go home, cook a dinner with it, and then bring it back to him the next day. And they'd have him critique it. And they'd say, does this taste right? Like, remotely right? And he'd say, you need a little bit more of this, a little less of that. And they did that consistently, like week after week, cooking meals, buying groceries, cooking meals, bringing it to him. And eventually, like that inevitably led to a good friendship with him. Because he loved the fact that they were genuinely interested in him. They were interested in his heritage, his culture. And they were there to learn. So eventually he's like, you guys aren't getting this. Come over to my house. My wife will cook. Then you'll understand what I'm talking about. So they did. And that kind of thing kept happening. And so through this one man, they began forming friendships with other people in the Pakistani community because they had this guy's goodwill. They weren't there beating him overhead with the Bible. They were there showing that they were interested, showing that they cared. And that inevitably led to opportunities to say, okay, why do you care? Why are you guys different than most English people who just want to leave us alone or kick us out? And so they had a reason to explain the hope that was within them. I love that story, though, because, again, these were very normal, very normal people. They were not, like, super Christians. They were just thinking creatively, thinking outside the box. They felt called, and they said, okay, how are we gonna do this? Another one, in kind of a very different situation, a very different context, is down in Australia, in Perth. There's a suburb there called Ellenbrook, which is fairly affluent. And what that gospel community noticed, most of the GC lived there in Ellenbrook. What they noticed was that there was very little community in the secular sense of the word in Ellenbrook. It was a bedroom community, right? They had, two-car garages with remote openers, so you didn't even have to risk going outside and meeting a neighbor. You could drive into your house, close your door, walk in, turn on the TV. Wouldn't need to see another person. There were no restaurants. There were, no one used the parks. So they decided that one thing they could do was help inspire people to enjoy community together, in the secular sense of the word, enjoying community, because we are created to be people in community. So they began holding block parties. They began holding events in the park to bring people together, to get neighbors to meet each other. The folks in Ellenbrook loved it because it was, because it was fun and because it completely smashed their identity of what Christianity was. They saw Christianity as this list of rules of, don't have sex before marriage, don't get drunk, don't do these kind of things. And here, though, they see a church that is all about celebrating together, that is all about enjoying good wine and good food together. It's all about partying, right? That's been the case since Israel, right? They were commanded to have these huge nationwide parties where everyone was invited. And it just blew away their concept of what Christianity was. So then the last one was my favorite, which is Refuge, which is mine, the one I was a part of. And Refuge, we were about 20 people, roughly. It changed a lot in the 2 years I was there. Very diverse group of people. We had very, very diverse group. We had older people, younger people, single people, married people, kids out of college, kids in nappies and diapers. We had people looking for work, people laid off, people with serious health issues, people fairly well off, people retired. You name it, we had everything. We had Ukrainian, Australians, Americans, Brits, all together. Train spotters, Star Trek fans, whatever they're called, Trekkies. It spanned the gamut. And part of the time, sometimes that was difficult because it was easy to feel like you were the only one and you were misunderstood or no one else really got you. And we had to learn to kind of get beyond ourselves and get over that and just begin to love each other as family. At one point, we stopped and looked, and we realized that everyone was the only in a fairly unique way. Like, I was the only single guy for a really long time. Someone else was the only single girl for a really long time. The only family with infants. The only family with kids out of college. The only retired people. The only person with, you know, kind of serious health issues. And we had to learn to look beyond that and to love each other. The thing was, though, because of that, the only thing we had in common was Jesus. It wasn't our natural friendships that kept us together. It wasn't our natural interests that kept us together. It wasn't our age group that kept us together. It was our love for Jesus was our common connection. And that was enough. That was enough to be family to each other. And that was enough to love each other. It was also, though, great for our witness to the world because, again, we are a reconciled people. Jesus is the God who reconciles Jews and Gentiles, males and females, and even, you know, across age groups. So you look at Revelations, right? You get a glimpse into the throne room of the Lamb. What is it? It's surrounded by people of every tribe and nation and tongue worshiping Jesus. It is this diverse group of people. And also, though, when we met new people, when we met people we were trying to share the gospel to, it meant that it was pretty easy and natural for someone in the GC to connect with them. There's probably someone who's also interested in train spotting. There's probably someone who's also traveled to India or traveled, you know, or wants to travel to this part of the world, or who feels like they're still understanding a new country and a new culture. So that was kind of a cool part of it. So that was who we were. Our mission, so our name was Refuge. Our mission, our goal, our hope, our heart's desire was to reach refugees and asylum seekers with the gospel. Sheffield has, all of Europe really, has a lot of refugees. Sheffield was a city that had quite a few in particular, people who flee persecution from all over the world. We knew people from Eritrea and Somalia and Congo and Iran and Yemen and just Myanmar, genuinely all over the world. We chose it because a couple of reasons. One was that in society at large, refugees were kind of looked on with distrust or suspicion. They were looked on as people who were just there stealing jobs. They were looked on as people who didn't belong there, for people who were lying to gain entry, you know, to gain the system. They were looked on as terrorists and all those things. So we wanted to be distinctive in the way that we welcomed the aliens and the strangers, that we opened our doors and opened our arms to befriend them and to kind of show larger society that, look, this is how you're living, and it's ugly. We also, though, realized that there's a lot of social action, you know, social activism that goes out towards helping asylum seekers and refugees. But there was very little gospel witness. And how amazing would it be if, you know, people from Iran came to know Jesus, and then eventually when the situation changes and they go back there, what if they bring the gospel with them? What if they bring the gospel with them back to Congo or back to Eritrea, you know, once its 13-year civil war ends, that kind of thing? That would be an amazing thing. And here we are, like, you know, however many billion people in the world, and here we are in Sheffield with an audience. So that was divine. The way we tried to do that, so naturally we weren't going to meet a lot of refugees. We weren't just going to rub shoulders with them on the street and begin to befriend them. So we needed an opportunity, and what we did is we hosted a once-a-week conversation class on Saturday mornings. We started in the church building. We realized that was kind of off-putting to certain people that we were trying to reach out to, so we switched to a local community forum. And it was basically a free class where non-English speakers could come and practice their English. We didn't have many formal lesson plans. We kind of had goals for every week we were there. And people came with all different levels of English skill. And they just wanted to learn. They wanted to get a chance to practice it without, you know, sounding stupid, or if they did sound stupid, without someone laughing at them. And it was fun. It was really a good time to meet people. Our hope was that it would do two things. It would be a blessing to the city in general, right? So Jeremiah 29, be a blessing to the city that you're in. It's just genuinely a good service to people to help them, you know, learn the language of the culture they're living in. But it was also a way for us to begin to build friendships and to begin to build relationships that could then be ones whereby we share the gospel with them, whereby we show the gospel to them, in a way that we just wouldn't have an opportunity otherwise. It was one of those things where we wanted friendships that began in conversation class to ultimately become something where it was where the entire gospel community was involved, where they got to see our lives together. Because we wanted to live this distinctive lives, but people need to see that. And you know, and it wasn't just going to happen for 2 hours on a Saturday morning. So we would invite them to lunch, or we'd invite them to play cricket in the park after conversation class. We'd invite them to dinner when we were going to celebrate some traditional English holiday. We'd say, hey, you know, do you want to come along? This is a traditional thing. You know, you could learn from it. So an example of that, and kind of the coolest example, or the one I really like, is there's an Iranian family we got to know through conversation class. A husband and wife, their son, and we met them at conversation class. They just wanted to learn to speak English better. So we befriended them there. Eventually, you know, they began coming to the park with us afterwards, and they began hanging out with us outside of conversation class. There was a 9-year-old in our gospel community who's now obviously older, but he was able to befriend the son of this Iranian family, Armin, and Gareth, like, it was what was cool about it was, like, Gareth, this 9-year-old, saw himself as an integral element of our mission. He knew our mission was to reach asylum seekers with the gospel. He knew Armin's family didn't know Jesus, so he saw his friendship with Armin as something that was part of who we were as a family, part of what we wanted to do. He was a part of our team. And through that, like, eventually, you know, we had him over for dinner. We'd show him things that we'd have him over when we were watching TV. And they'd invite us over. Like, they taught us how to write our names in, you know, in Farsi. They fed us Iranian tea. They cooked us traditional meals and stuff. And it was just a very good, a good friendship. And with time, they became more and more interested in the gospel, more and more interested in, okay, who's this Jesus you always talk about? Because he sounds different than the prophet, you know, that we're used to in Islam. And so they began asking questions. Why do you care? What is the gospel? Why do you guys talk about the cross so much? What is the cross? And we were able just to explain, very clearly and bluntly, look, this is what we believe. This is why we believe it. This is how it motivates how we live. They were very interested in seeing what church was like. They had never been in a church. They had no idea what went on in a church. For all they knew, we sacrificed goats or something. And so we invited them along on one of our Sunday mornings, and here comes a Muslim family to our church service. It was cool because they knew everyone in the gospel community, because they had dinner multiple times with people in the gospel community. When they first came to Crowded House, the gathering, they knew like a fifth of the people in the church. So it wasn't this big, scary, overwhelming new experience for them. It was friendly faces, people they had known and met before. Yeah, it's really cool. Eventually, they were in the refugee system. The legal system required them to move to a different city. So we helped them get plugged into a church up there. Last we heard, they are still kind of on the fence about Christianity. They're still kind of, they think there's something true about it. They think there's something to it. They're still very interested in it, but they have yet to kind of commit to Jesus. But we went up there to visit them once to make sure that they were settled in. And Ali Razor, the husband, he said to me, like, well, we've noticed that Christians are different than other English people, and it was like that was such good news to hear because we are different. We march the beat of a very different drummer, and over time and through just fun stuff together, through religious stuff together, they saw that in us and they recognized that, and they recognized that it wasn't just us; it was this other random church in Newcastle. So that was awesome to see. We were very dependent on grace, right? There were language barriers. There were people from Islamic backgrounds. They were people who went through crazy life circumstances that we had never even begun, you know. We've never been through the things that they've been through. And it, sometimes that was overwhelming in terms of, okay, how are we going to try to disciple these people? How on earth are we going to explain the gospel to them? And it was entirely a thing where our weakness was an opportunity for God to do his work. And that was our only recourse. That's the only thing we could fall back on, was for the Spirit to work. So we did those things. We also, though, wanted to react and take the opportunities that God put in our lap. People who weren't asylum seekers, but people who would be unloving to ignore. So there was a lady in our gospel community. She was the only Christian in her family. Her husband and her kids weren't. And through our friendship with Allison, we began spending time with the rest of her family. And it was cool because it's cool compared to where it began with. So her husband was alienated from her. He was a staunch, vocal atheist, very critical of religion. He had had a bad experience with the church in the past and hated everything to do with it. With time, though, you know, as we began spending time with their family, as we had them over for meals, as we went over to Allison's house and, you know, listened to Bon Jovi concerts and stuff, like, he began to warm up to us just as friends. And now most of his friends are Christians. Like, his best friends are all Christians. And he's much less antagonistic about the whole thing than he was at the start. Still not a believer, but compared to where he was, it's amazing. One of her sons did become a believer while we were there. I was able to help baptize him, which was probably the highlight of my time there. Again, just through friendships that started, he began coming along with us on Sundays. He began coming along with us when we had prayer meetings and things like that, became more and more involved. And, you know, one day said, yeah, I think I want to be baptized. And so we talked him through it. It was awesome to see. She had a daughter who had, like, a crazy tough year, like, very serious medical issues going on, kind of traumatic family events going on. Her house was arsoned and those kind of things. And because we were already friends with her, we were there to kind of help her pick up the pieces and just, to a degree, be there when no one else was going to be there. So she had an engagement party, and she invited a lot of people. She invited us. Apart from one of her friends, we were the only people who showed up. Like, all of her other friends bailed on her. So we saw that as an integral part of who we wanted to be and how we wanted to reach out to that family. So with all this, the hope was that we didn't want to treat people as projects, right? We want to share the gospel with them, but not in kind of a we're so great, you guys really need Jesus like us, and you can be great like us. But we wanted it to be one of friendship. So ultimately, like, all the people I've talked about, they were people who initially we didn't know a thing about them. They were cold contacts. But through friendship and through time together, they became people that we knew and loved. We knew their story. We were genuine friends with them, and out of love, we wanted them to know Jesus. Like, that was specifically for those people. That was our heart's desire. And that meant that it wasn't this kind of abstract, it wasn't treating them like projects, and that's something we were conscious of avoiding. In terms of our life together, we did everything together. It started, so 2 years ago, the church decided that it wanted to try this thing out called Gospel Communities. Credit House is always changing. We used to say the only thing that was certain was change. Because we were always trying different things and saying, okay, this works, this doesn't work. So we're trying out GCs 2 years ago. When it started, Refuge was a bunch of random people in a living room, all kind of looking at each other and twiddling their thumbs. We're pretty sure that we were kind of like the leftovers when they were divvying up GCs, and they're like, these people can go here because we don't know what to do with them. And the thing is, though, like, 2 years, looking back now, like, 2 years later, it went from being random people in a living room who barely knew each other to a real genuine family. In the truest sense of the word, apart from blood relation, we were a family. And it took time. It took a lot of time. But we tried to do things together. We ate together a lot. We had fun together. We played together. We went to the park together. We painted each other's living room together. We, you know, helped each other move house together. We went to conversation class together. We invited refugees over to our houses together. We went to the park together. Not always the entire GC at once. Often, you know, in twosies and threesies. But over time, doing things as a whole. And, you know, it wasn't always easy because we weren't natural friends, but we learned to love each other, and that's what a family is, right? That irrational commitment to the well-being of other people, as we're reminded in the sermon. Because we saw each other as family, it meant that like in terms of hospitality, we had to get over the idea of dinner parties, and we had to begin just opening our door. So like the dinner party hospitality tends to think, okay, I need to impress people, I need to cook a nice meal, I need to clean up the house and all those things. Whereas when we were trying to share life together, we realized that, you know, it's a farce if people to even pretend like our life is organized and all together, and that our house is always clean and our kids are always perfectly behaved. You know, so we wanted to open the door and say, hey, I'm folding laundry. This is a great time for you to join me. Here's a stack. Like, genuinely, we would help fold each other's laundry. That kind of thing. Obviously, not purposely, but that was the level. That's the level we got to in the end, which was awesome. It didn't mean there was never any privacy. And that was kind of the other cool thing of it, though, is that it took the pressure off of needing private times, in the sense that if I wanted to go over to someone's house and they said, you know, this is our date night, we just need time together, it was fine because I didn't feel offended, because I knew I had seen them earlier in the week. I knew I was going to see them later. It wasn't like this thing that I was being excluded from. It was their time as a family. Let's see. Yeah, it wasn't always easy. We definitely offended each other. We definitely sinned against each other in very real ways, in hurtful ways. We had to learn to get through that. We had to learn to persevere. But by the end, like when I left, it felt like a family in an unbelievable way. And we would do family things together. Like family was so big to me because I was, you know, 3,500 miles from my own family. And God is the God who puts people in families. That is the kind of God who he is. And, like, you know, I'd get invited on vacations with people, which was awesome because, it's not like I'm going to go on vacation by myself. But that could have been a time for, like, husbands and wife just to go on vacation with each other, which is fine and needed and certainly a good thing. But the fact that they invited me along and let me share those memories was awesome, like, genuinely awesome. And it was a cool thing to see. Just try to wrap this up. Everyone had different services, different ways they served. Some people had big houses and they could often host us. Some people, were kind of natural evangelists and were great at answering people's questions. Some people were just, you know, the friendliest people in the world. You talk to them once and you think you're their best friend. So everyone kind of had this different thing that they were bringing to the table. Even, like I said, the kids. Even Gareth was an integral part of our missionary community. And we told him that. We treated him like that. We treated him like a full-fledged member. We spent a lot of time discipling him, a lot of time kind of training him. And he was 9. He's now, like, you know, 11 going on 12. But at the time, you know, he did, you know, kid things, whatever. He got really bored with the Bible at times and all those kind of normal kid things. But he gets it. So, like, the coolest, I think, probably my favorite story of all my time in England So Gareth loves football, loves soccer, right? He has his own little soccer team. He manages it. He gets his friends together. They're part of like a church community league, and they play other kids and stuff. And that's his thing. Apparently, there is a kid at his school who is kind of being a bully towards him. We could tell, like, when he came home from school, he'd be despondent or you know, upset about something. And it was usually this one kid. The teachers were aware of it. You know, they were trying to work through it and stuff. Either way, one time they're at this soccer practice, and this bully shows up. And Gareth's dad is like, oh, no, what's going on? So he asked Gareth. He's like, Gareth, what, why is Sean here? And Gareth said, oh, well, I invited him. And his dad's like, what? And Gareth goes, well, you know, Jesus said we should love our enemies. And for me, my enemy is this bully, and I needed to invite him. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. Like, when you're learning about the gospel from, like, an 11-year-old, that's when you know, like, God is at work. And that came after, you know, hours and hours with him and stuff, and it was really cool to see. So that was my time in England. Yeah, thank you. Do you have any questions? Trying to tie it all up. So it was cool. It's very cool. So, that's that. Sorry. I really like Gareth. He's awesome.
All right, thank you guys for your time.
We have this little handout. It talks about different identities and rhythms. It's on the back or somewhere. Mikey's got them. And it has ideas for like different aspects of life, like different rhythms of life. So it talks about being missionaries together, family together, servants together as identities. And then rhythms are kind of things that people do throughout the day and throughout their lives. And when you think through the identities and think through how they could apply to the rhythms, that helps you begin to flesh out what it could look like for your gospel community in practice in terms of, you know, a rhythm of life is celebrating together. So then you can say, what does it look like to be a missionary that celebrates? What does it look like to be a family that celebrates? What does it look like to be servants that celebrate or learners that celebrate, right? People who learn about the gospel and in doing that celebrate. So that's something to help you all think through these things.
And those are on the back chair back there.